Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Triangulation, episode 75, recorded October 24th, 2012. Jonathan Abrams. Triangulation is brought to you by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use stamps to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Triangulation. And by Ford, featuring available sync. Now you can control your media player with simple voice commands. Enjoy your drive while you easily search and listen to your favorite songs. Check it out on the 2012 Ford Focus or at Ford.com/triangulation.
It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get the most interesting, most brilliant, most innovative people in technology on the set. We spend some time talking with them. We give you a chance to talk to. Our guest today is great, a serial entrepreneur. He's started five companies, including a company that helps other people start companies. And he's got a new social news effort, which we're going to show you in just a little bit. Let's welcome Jonathan Abrams to Triangulation. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
I lured you here.
Under sort of false pretenses.
Semi-false pretenses. Jonathan noted that we had a Commodore. Is that a pet?
It is.
On the set. And said, does it boot? I would like to play with it. I said, if you come to Triangulation, you can play with it.
So I came all the way to Petaluma to play with the pet, and it doesn't work.
Well, it booted.
It did. The second time, it actually turned on, and it had the ready prompt. And
Which is the same on your shirt. Yeah.
So I wore this. I decided to geek out and wear the shirt in your honor. This was also sort of the Commodore 64 prompt.
Right.
These are sort of the Commodore colors. But the pet, we got it to at least come up, but the keyboard doesn't seem to
do
anything.
Is it nostalgic for you? Was that your first computer?
The first computer I owned was actually the Commodore 64.
Right.
But my junior high had two pets that I played with. There were actually a lot of different models of pets, but I think I did play with one similar to that.
That's cool.
So that was one of the earliest computers I used before I got one of my own.
So were you like Bill Gates and others? Were you in high school? Did you like kind of become obsessed with personal computing? Or
well, it was before high school. I started when I was 10.
10?
10, yeah.
Was your dad into this? I mean, how did you get access?
No, actually, nobody in my family was good at computers.
It just
but
it somehow triggered something.
Yeah, and I got the Commodore 64, came out in 82 when I was 12. So that was the first computer I owned, was the Commodore 64.
So what was when you were 10, what were you doing?
The first computer I think I played with, I think it was either an Atari 400 or 800.
That was my first, was a 400 and 800.
Right, and the 400 had the membrane keyboard.
Right. It was so horrible, I had it for a week.
Real keyboard, and it had a slot where you could put in an Atari
Star
game,
Raiders.
Or you could put in BASIC.
Right.
And then, like I said, my junior high had a couple pets.
So it was BASIC that you first wrote software in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, everything was BASIC back then.
Do you remember,
Apple,
like,
Atari, it was
your
all
first
BASIC.
Real program? I mean, obviously, your first program was 10, go to 20... Print Jonathan Abrams, go to 10 or whatever.
It was, I was actually discussing this in the drive up here with Ross. It was a rocket ship with character graphics, and then go to 10, so that the rocket ship
would keep going,
would go up the screen.
That's good.
And you know, and be
using
launched.
Using those, not ASCII, but those weird characters that they had in the Commodore character set.
Right, and your pet actually has the character graphics as well. If you look at the keys. In addition to the A or B, you can see the character graphics there. Unfortunately, it's not working, so I couldn't make a rocket ship.
How did you build an array with the character graphics, or did you just say print, 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 print? How sophisticated were you?
I don't remember that. That was 32 years ago.
Is that for Jonathan? Give him we're going to give you something.
Thank you.
There you go, just for you. I don't know what it is, but enjoy.
I think it's
a clear
vodka.
Liquid. It's a clear liquid. Could be anything right now. That's interesting that you didn't have that in your background. Was there a relative? I mean, was it a friend? How did you?
No, nobody in my family was.
Not at
was
all.
No.
You were just a weirdo.
An
Where
aberration.
Was this?
Toronto.
Toronto.
Yeah.
And did you feel like even at that age, this is something big that is going to be important in my life, or did you just was it just
messing around? No, it was what I was very focused on, and it's kind of comical to look back and think about the parents and the teachers who wanted me to be more well-rounded and, you know, and be interested in French or or geography or something, because you know, computers, that's sort of a pointless obsession,
nobody ever made any money in computers. What are you going to play video games for a living? What are you, nuts?
Yeah. So I would imagine things are different today, that if a kid is interested in computers, people recognize it might be the beginning of a lucrative
something
career.
Something valuable. Yeah. Well, I think that's important. But I do think it's also important that the people who, at least in your generation, did become entrepreneurs, did I think, come to it early and fell in love with it right away.
Yeah, I mean, even if I had been born much later, it really couldn't have been that much earlier than 10.
Right.
Of course, the computers then were pretty crappy.
Right.
I mean,
well, you know, we had this discussion on the previous show because Google's released a $249 Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little suspicious of the whole thing because I feel like it's underpowered, and that what will happen is the same thing that happened with the VIC-20, more than the Commodore 64, but the VIC-20, and you can go all the way up to the first netbooks. It's people buy it because it's cheap, but then they realize, well, you can't do anything. Did the Commodore 64, did that make a difference to you? Did it help you become?
Sure.
So maybe the Chromebook is useful.
At the time, the Commodore 64.
It was powerful.
Was powerful at the time.
64K of memory.
Yeah. And, I mean, at the time, that was a revolutionary computer and was one of the best-selling computers of all time.
Right. VIC-20 only had SNI 8K. It was.
I didn't have one of those.
And it was really cheap.
Yeah. And only had, I think, like 20 columns on the screen.
You couldn't do anything really with it. So do you think that there are kids today who are getting an inexpensive, maybe a Chromebook or even an Android phone, and are kind of falling in love in the same way you did? Or is it different today?
I have no idea, but I think you could probably go on Craigslist and just buy a used laptop for probably $200 that is
with
great,
a language
that you could do anything with.
Yeah.
I'm not really familiar with the Chromebooks. I do have one of those.
Well, it's basically just Chrome.
I have one of those Google, the smaller tablet that Google made.
The Nexus 7.
Yes, that one.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And it was inexpensive. And, and it's actually pretty nice.
That was the other discussion. We actually had it after the show. Aaron Newcomb was here. And he said, would have liked to have said, but we ran out of time, was, why is Google competing with Android, which is a real operating system, with this kind of fake operating system? And with Android, you really can learn. I mean, if you were a kid today, would mobile programming be where you would go? Or would you still be looking at desktop? Would you be looking at web?
Well, I think you need a laptop or a desktop to program because you really need a keyboard,
right?
I think, to actually do coding.
Right.
But
I guess you do, don't you?
Yeah, I think so.
You can't
actually
really do it with a
everybody
stylus.
Makes fun of netbooks, but I actually have a netbook and I use it all the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
All right. I stand corrected.
Because it has a keyboard.
Keyboard's the key.
Yeah, and I use it in the evening to do email.
Right. So did you go to a college for computer science?
Computer science, yeah.
Yeah. Where was that?
Back in Canada, McMaster University.
McMaster, yeah, sure.
Have you heard of it?
Of course.
Oh.
I know all the MICs, McMaster, McGill, all of them. And did you decide to become an entrepreneur, or did you go into the workforce afterwards?
When I was in college and right after, I did not actually plan to become an entrepreneur. I actually thought I wanted to work in a research lab. And I think that was just through lack of awareness of sort of the entrepreneurial startup world. I thought that the place that I'd get to sort of invent cool things would be at something like an AT&T Bell Labs.
Right. Well, that was the case in those days, probably. I mean,
yeah. So I began my career at Nortel, which at the time was sort of the flagship company in Canada. Right. And I worked initially on telecommunication software.
It's pretty close to Bell Labs. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it was the Canadian equivalent.
Yeah.
And they called it Bell Northern Research back then.
Right.
And then I did some sort of skunkworks internet stuff there and got an opportunity to transfer to this little research lab called the Computing Technology Lab at BNR/Nortel.
This is mid-90s now?
Yeah. But what I found was that it was a lot of PhDs and papers and demos and prototypes, and I ended up finding was not sort of what I'd hoped for. And at the same time, Netscape and Yahoo went public. And
big time.
And I had been using the internet for a while because I'd been a computer science student when the web came online.
And there was no commercial traffic on it, so it was very much research-focused.
Right. But if you were a computer science student, of course, you were there when the first download of Mosaic came out, the first download of Netscape Navigator Beta.
Right.
So when Netscape and Yahoo went public and it started to seem like this might actually be like a real thing, and then I read Jerry Kaplan's book called Startup, A Silicon Valley Adventure.
Yeah.
And that was the book he wrote about Go, which was sort of like the iPad, like 10, 15 years too early.
Right.
And that book was about Silicon Valley, venture capital, and startups. And I was not familiar with any of those things until I read the book. And even though the book is really about, you know, one of those pioneering visionary... a pioneering visionary company that's not a success. After reading the book, I thought it sounded great.
I could do that.
It sounded romantic and interesting and fun. And so I emailed my resume to Netscape and Yahoo.
And?
Never heard back from Yahoo, but Netscape hired me.
Awesome.
And I moved to Silicon Valley.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
And how big was it when they hired you?
It was just after the IPO.
So they were pretty big.
Yeah, around 1,000 people. And while I was there, it went from 1,000 to 3,000 really fast.
And what did you do at first?
At Netscape?
Yeah.
I was a software engineer. I was working in the Java group and the browser group.
Java or Java?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So how did you... I kind of buried the lead. You found it... In 2002, you founded Friendster.
Yep.
And I remember very well on Tech TV when we found Friendster. And... we joined immediately, and the servers went right down.
So it's your fault.
It might be, because I certainly think Kat Schwartz and I were all excited about this.
And it's Sarah Lane.
Sarah Lane.
Because I remember I was on the show a few times.
And I think that it was, I can't remember a social network before that. It was the first social network.
Well, I guess it depends on the definitions. I mean, there's things like Friendster and Facebook and MySpace, and then sometimes people try to call anything a social network. Classmates.com tried to go IPO at one point, and they were, you know, saying that it was a social network. So people can use the term generically. But when I did Friendster, a lot of the concepts were pretty goofy and unintuitive, and I had no idea it would work. And certainly the idea that people would put, you know, a profile on the internet, their photo, and use their real name, that was pretty weird stuff at the time.
I can't tell you, this is like 2 years before Mark Zuckerberg came up with Facebook. This was as far as I'm concerned, the beginning of the whole thing. I mean, if the Winklevoss twins sued Mark Zuckerberg, they really should have, I mean, Mark should, and I bet he did, said, well, what about this Jonathan Abrams guy? Because he predated you too. Were you at Netscape when you came up with this idea? How did that
happen? Oh, no, that was years later.
You'd left Netscape.
Yeah, so
had you done anything else startup-wise?
Yeah, so the first company I started was called Hotlinks.
Oh, I remember that.
And that was a social bookmarking company.
Yeah.
Of course, this was before we called it social. It was community.
It wasn't social, that's right.
It was community. That was sort of the 1999 era.
I used Hotlinks, for bookmarking.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I probably used everything you ever did, actually. So Hotlinks, and that was a kind of a success. I mean, I know everybody knew about it, right?
It was, you know, way too
early. No way to make money, though.
Well, it was, I mean, obviously, you know, this was way before AdWords and AdSense and all that kind of stuff, but it was just way, way too early. I mean, I think the concept of people sort of bookmarking and sharing links like Pinterest and StumbleUpon and Dig and now Twitter, you know, came years and years, years later.
Right.
So it was definitely too early.
So you can have the right idea, but not the right time.
Sure. Well, I mean, look at Go, Jerry Kaplan's company.
That was the Slate opposite. They had Slate. They had a pen. It was a tablet. But, of course, the hardware wasn't close to
it. It was way too early.
Yeah. But the internet, I mean, Hotlinks, that's not too early. The internet was alive. People were using a browser.
Well, I mean, the number of people who had internet access, broadband, who really were savvy about online usage in 1999 compared to today, drastically smaller.
So Friendster was your second.
Yeah.
What happened to Hotlinks?
So after the dot-com crash, we merged with another company, and I moved on. And then eventually, I never really found out what happened. But, you know,
I should go to Hotlinks.com. We can find out.
Well, it's not up anymore, but it was sort of part of the dot-com crash wreckage.
It's a Riesling wine resource site. At least it's gone back to Canada now.
Is that actually Hotlinks.com?
Hotlinks.com. Has nothing to do with Hotlinks. Niagara Wine Tours.
Is that Sandy's fault?
It's a Canadian company.
So my friend Ross worked at Friendster, but he also worked at Hotlinks.
Oh, wow, you've gone back a long way. That's neat. He's your entourage of
my one. Entourage today.
So what do you remember? What was the insight that led to Friendster?
it wasn't just one thing, and everybody always wants sort of that Pez dispenser
moment. What was the aha?
Yeah, you know, so people always want one sort of single story, and then when you don't have it, then they say, oh, I started Friendster to meet girls or something stupid like that.
That's
people
what
always want.
Poor Mark Zuckerberg, that's what Aaron Sorkin ended up saying.
Right.
It was because his girlfriend broke up with him, which isn't even true.
No, it's not true in any of these cases, but people, unfortunately, if you don't supply a fake, you know, Pez dispenser, aha story, they'll make one for you. In reality, it was a culmination of a whole bunch of different things. It was, you know, part of it was being inspired by the previous generation of online community.
The Well and CompuServe and Genie.
I wasn't on
Prodigy.
The Well, but I'm talking about e-groups and Match.com and Rise and GeoCities and Hot or Not, all of those sites.
Hot or Not preceded it. I didn't realize Hot or Not was that old.
Mm-hmm. And then it was thinking about Stanley Milgram's small world theory, which everybody knows is the 6 degrees of separation.
Right.
And since it was my second company, you know, I'd moved to the Silicon Valley from Canada not knowing anybody. So I'd had to spend several years networking.
Right.
Because I didn't go to Berkeley or Stanford. And I had to, you know, meet this person who could introduce me to that person who could introduce me to a venture capitalist. So the concepts of networking was part of my life. And all of that sort of came together. And it was 2002. Things were very dead. So I had, I guess, a lot of time to waste coming up with goofy ideas. And I thought, you know, what if we brought the real-life social context that you have in the real world online with you? And instead of being anonymous and random, you would sort of use your real identity and have your friends and sort of have a sort of experiment, if you will, not really about 6 degrees, but maybe about 2 degrees and 3 degrees and your friends of friends and those people. So I built the prototype for Friendster, and it took off.
I mean, there had been dating sites before that, but it wasn't quite that.
Well, the idea that it was a site that was not a dating site, and you didn't only use it for dating, and people who weren't single would also use it.
Right.
But you could also...
You could meet girls or guys.
You could use it for that.
Yeah.
That was a weird and sort of novel concept. And in real life, of course, you know, I'm an investor in a nightclub in San Francisco. And, of course, a lot of people who go there
DNA.
Are single. It's called Slide.
Slide.
Yeah. So a lot of people who go are looking to...
We love Slide, apparently.
Awesome.
Somebody spends a lot of time there.
So, of course, you know...
What is it about entrepreneurs? Because people... I mean, these nightclubs are all owned by Silicon Valley guys.
I don't know about all.
A lot of them.
But single people go to nightclubs, and a lot of people, you know, go and meet people. But that's, of course, not the only reason you go. So in real life, it's normal.
You go to have fun. And
in real life is more... you know, there's more context, there's more nuance.
There's more nuance, yeah.
And, you know, that was part of the weird concept of Friendster. And, you know, in the early days, the journalists would write, you know, it's supposed to be a dating site, but nobody's really using it for dating. And the other journalists would be like, it's not supposed to be a dating site, but people are actually, you know. And the idea was that it was really sort of, you know, the idea was that it was a site that wasn't just a dating site. But that is, of course, one of the fun things people could use it for.
But I can tell you, I know, because I vividly remember finding it. I don't remember how. And signing up and getting very excited about it. There was something about it for your initial users an aha moment. And it did, in fact, get viral very quickly.
Yep.
It grew, in fact, so fast you couldn't keep up with the growth. In fact, if there was a failure of Friendster to become MySpace or Facebook, it was that your servers just kept crashing.
Yeah, I mean, it started to grow exponentially. We needed to scale up.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, you know, some of the technology mistakes were made. And
what did you write it in?
Initially, it was in Java.
Because that's what you'd worked on at Netscape.
Yeah, which was also used by Bebo and some other sites.
Right.
And then,
so Bebo predates Friendster?
No, Bebo came after.
Came later.
But they also used Java and scaled fine.
Right.
But that
wasn't the problem, in other words.
No, it shouldn't have been the problem. But after I was replaced as CEO and the company went through 6 CEOs in 6 years, all the software was rewritten from scratch from Java into PHP.
Oh, that's good.
And, you know, ignoring any sort of people's opinions about Java or PHP, rewriting anything from scratch from one language to another is usually a horrible idea.
Right.
And I think in this case it wasn't a good idea.
Yeah. I want to hear this story about how, because I think it's a good object lesson for people about how you start something and then you get investors and then they push you out and then it gets complicated. And I'd love to hear
about that. It used to be pretty normal. I mean, I think that just used to be standard.
Right.
And I think, you know, things
Zuckerberg are changing. Zuckerberg has done an amazing thing, hasn't he, by keeping control of his company.
Yeah, and there were advisors and investors that were involved in both companies, that were involved in Friendster and then Facebook. And I think seeing what happened at Friendster...
They all learned.
I think that was part of the example.
Yeah. That's kind of sad to be the example.
Yeah, well, you know, I think things have changed a bit.
Yeah.
Ben Horowitz from Andreessen Horowitz, you know, wrote a blog post, I don't know, maybe it's a year or two now, you know, saying, hey, maybe we don't want to fire the founders. We want the founders to be successful CEOs.
Right. Let's make them good.
Make them work. And that's a great attitude. The fact that that was sort of a fresh take on things tells you something.
Yeah. We're talking with Jonathan Abrams. He founded Friendster. He's done five companies. In fact, I want to talk about your, because you have an incubator as well. Is that
fair? It's not an incubator.
It's not quite an incubator.
It's not an incubator. We I don't like to get bogged down in the terminology, but I think if you hear incubator, people would probably think maybe we're providing funding and we're competing with Y Combinator and programs like that, and that's definitely not true.
It's a school for startups.
It's not a school. We actually don't do any of that. It's really two things. It's a co-working space where startups work together. But it's one with a little twist. It's invite-only, sort of referral-based, curated co-working space that is a little bit more focused, but not exclusively, but a little bit more catering to experienced entrepreneurs. And it's also sort of a private club and hangout for entrepreneurs in San Francisco.
Sounds actually pretty cool.
Yeah. But it's not an incubator, and we actually have a lot of Y Combinator companies at Founders, and I think right now probably around five. And we have probably had some companies from some of the other Catalyst or Incubator Accelerator programs as well. Right. But that's not what we do.
All right. We'll talk more about that in a second. And we'll also give you a chance to ask Jonathan your questions and maybe share your memories of Friendster. And I want to show you his new startup, which actually I am loving, but you cannot yet join because, sorry.
But soon.
Soon?
So what I need is I need to hire some people so that if the site crashes, it's not just me.
Hold on. I won't tell him the site yet. And you can hire some people in the next 60 seconds,
okay.
And then I'll tell them the site. How about that?
Great.
You got 1 minute to scale. We're talking about startups in just a bit more with Triangulation, but right now I'd like to talk about stamps. Who knew? This is not philately here, my friends. This is how you can avoid your trip to the post office. You know, especially now, this is the wrong time to go to the post office. It gets crazy in the holiday season. Everybody's mailing cards. You don't want to do that. If you need to mail in business, you don't need to go to the post office. You need stamps.com. It's not a postage meter. You don't have to lease anything. You don't have to buy special ink. It's what you've already got, your computer, your printer, and stamps.com, Mac or PC. Now, with stamps.com, you print your own U.S. postage from your computer, from your printer, but it's more than printing stamps. I mean, in fact, it's not. In fact, that's a bad name. It's like everything you need to. It's like the post office comes to you.com. The post office is where you're sitting right now.com. It prints mailing labels. It prints, it'll print on envelopes. If you've got, your clients are in your QuickBooks, your address book. If you do eBay or Amazon or Etsy, if you're a seller on PayPal and you take PayPal payments, it will take the data from those websites, print out a mailing label, print the appropriate postage. How do you know the appropriate postage? Oh, I forgot to tell you. We're going to give you a USB scale. You just plop the package or the letter on there. It sends it right to the software. So you always have exactly the right postage. It always knows what the right postage is. It's really easy to use, and it saves you money even, because with stamps.com you get discounts post office won't give you if you go to the post office. It saves the post office money if you use stamps.com. So they'll give you up to 21% off express mail, up to 15% off priority mail. Do you do international mailing? It'll help you with that. Discounts there too. And it fills out all the forms, automatically prints them out, everything you need. And at no point do you need to leave to go to the post office. The mail carrier comes. They'll pick up a package of any size, by the way. I know, if you're going to put it in the mailbox, it has to be 13 ounces or less. But not with stamps.com. Any way, any size, the mail carrier comes to you. You can even schedule a free pickup at any time. I want you to try this. Now, we've got a special offer. If you go to stamps.com, click the radio microphone. And don't take the $80. I got a better one. Click the radio microphone in the upper right-hand corner and use the offer code TRIANGULATION, TRIANGU. Chad, John, you're lazy. You should type that out. TRIANGULATION. You can use autocomplete if it happens to be there already. And look what happens. First of all, my tired old face shows up and it says, "Welcome, Leo Laporte listeners." And you get a $110 bonus offer. That includes $55 in free postage, a $5 supply kit, that scale that I mentioned, and a 4-week trial. You get to keep the scale forever, by the way. You don't have to send it back if you decide not to do it. Stamps.com. Use our offer code Triangulation for a better deal than those people off the street get. Jonathan Abrams is now Friendster.com is a gaming site now. That's just they bought the name, or
no? Friendster was bought in. I think it was 2000. I think it was the end of 2009 by a company in Malaysia, and then at some point
did it persist as a social network for a while?
For a while, yeah. And then at some point between then and now, I think they have pivoted into social gaming.
That's fine. Good. God bless them. There was Dogster. There was Catster. There was all these different stirs. You started a thing.
Well, so, Friendster wasn't the first stir. There was Napster.
Oh.
Friendster. Of course, Napster wasn't social.
But it wasn't social. But were you inspired by Napster to name it? Friendster?
I think I probably was. It's so long ago. I mean, 10 years ago.
Yeah, they all kind of blurs. So what happened? You started up. Did you get angel capital, venture capital? How did you fund
For
it?
Nuzzle?
For Friendster.
For Friendster. Started off with just building a prototype with no resources of any kind. This is 2002.
So just doing it yourself.
Things were pretty
Nobody
dead.
Wanted
I
to
mean,
buy.
You know, people were not excited to invest in internet companies. And it was actually when Friendster launched in 2003 and started to grow and people were joining it and was getting press. I think that was part of what ushered in sort of the Web 2.0 resurgence of stuff.
Yeah.
But we did raise some angel funding and then eventually in the fall of 2003... a venture capital round.
So how'd they get you out of there? What happened?
Well, I think I went into it with sort of the conventional view at the time, which was that the right thing to do as a good founder is to accept that you're bringing aboard the experienced investors and that might mean other people come in as CEO and that you don't even attempt to retain control. And, you know, if we had had somebody else as CEO and the company had been extremely successfully managed, I don't think I would have had any complaints about that.
Right. You don't want to run the company, or do you?
Well, I think I would have rather ran the company and had it continue at the same level of success as it was when I was running it than what happened. And, you know, between VC funding and being bought by that Malaysian company, in that six-year period, the company went through six CEOs.
Yeah, that's not good.
So that tells you a little bit.
And it's not that it was a bad idea, because MySpace and Facebook proved that you were exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even an execution issue, except for those servers going down. I mean,
well, I think we ended up with the wrong people in charge, and then that led to the wrong technology decisions, and those technology mistakes were sort of compounded instead of fixed.
Did Mark Zuckerberg ever call you for advice? Would you give him some advice?
If he did,
Has he?
Well, he and I we had dinner once when one of the many CEOs of Friendster, I think, was trying to buy Facebook, and we had dinner.
That's cool. And Mark said, no way.
I don't think the offer was really an offer that...
But if you talk to him today, what would you say about, especially about monetization? I mean, their Facebook stock has tumbled because people say you can't monetize
mobile.
They
just had results yesterday that were pretty encouraging about the revenue.
Yeah.
I mean, look, there's been a lot of nonsense and exaggeration about social networking companies not making money. And I think this is a remnant of, the dot-com crash. All the press and everybody and the analysts got excited about all these companies that were really not solid businesses.
Pets.com.
All those companies that spent tons of money on things that Friendster and Facebook never had to spend money on. And then because of that, when Friendster started, you know, there was just a lot of skepticism, far more than actually was probably well-founded. You know, the reality is Facebook makes plenty of money.
They're doing fine.
Yeah.
More than a billion.
Yeah.
Anything with a B in it, I like it.
If you look at probably any year in the history of Facebook and compare it to an enterprise software company or any other technology company with the same number of years since its institutional funding, and you compared the progress in revenue, Facebook was probably doing, you know, above average.
Does it bother you at all that, you know, you were there first and you know, these guys are going to make all the money?
Well, I'm proud of what we built with Friendster. It was an innovative company, and I think that the influence of Friendster was probably bigger than could
Huge.
Be contained in one company.
Huge.
You know, and Dig and Yelp and Flickr and a whole bunch of companies were inspired by it. You know, it was frustrating as a technologist to see the technology messed up and to see sort of instead of incrementally fixing things every month and solving the problems, things sort of sometimes going backwards.
It just shows you the idea is one thing, but execution is everything, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
You can have an idea, but if you can't execute...
Yeah, and that's very applicable to my current company, Nuzzle, because people have said, I've seen that idea before. And
social news.
Social news.
In fact, unlike Friendster, where you were the first, this is you're not the last, but there's
right.
Prismatic, there's Bottlenose. I can think of a lot of social news
places. Lots of stuff.
And, of course, there's news.google.com.
There's a lot of stuff, a lot of it very different from Nuzzle, but certainly it's not as early as Hotlinks was. It's not first, and and people think, oh, there's other stuff. And, people, geeks love to build aggregators. Users don't necessarily love to use them because most of them are too complicated.
Google News.
But, yeah.
Google Reader, I mean, which is great for geeks, but nobody uses it.
Well, I don't use RSS anymore. I switched and really migrated my news consumption to using social feeds like Twitter and Facebook.
Well, Twitter is so powerful, and I think that really was an insight for people, that if you just follow the right people, you don't have to aggregate. You just see what they're up to.
Yeah, and I mean, I follow accounts on Twitter that are now sort of equivalent to the RSS feeds that I used to use. So instead of the TechCrunch or Hacker News or TechMeme RSS feed, I'll follow them on Twitter.
Right. It's a little more curated, a little more cultivated than just a bunch of... Well, you follow the TechCrunch news feed. It's everything.
Well, it has a social layer. I mean, the problem with RSS feeds is you have all these RSS feeds, and then it sort of becomes overwhelming.
It's too much.
So now it's this sort of thing that you're burdened with to look at every day with all these headlines, some of which you may be interested in, but a lot of it is noise.
So what was the idea with Nuzzle? What did you want? What do you want to do with Nuzzle?
So they
Nuzzle.com.
Right.
Actually, it's right there on the screen, beta.nuzzle.com. Here's my
Nuzzle. And that's your Nuzzle.
This is my Nuzzle. Everybody has their own Nuzzle. So what is it?
So it's really an attempt starting with my own usage to help me solve the social overload. Because the more I got into reading my news on Twitter and Facebook and adding more interesting people to follow and stuff, but then it got to be a little bit overwhelming and I couldn't always keep up. So I wanted a tool to help with that. And you're right, there's other stuff out there. But I wanted something that was simpler.
So you, as often as the case, you were scratching your own itch?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this definitely started with my own shift from RSS feeds, from other ways that I was consuming news, to using social tools like Twitter and Facebook.
And is this written in Java? Or
it is, actually.
It is. You like Java. He's a Java fan. So I've sorted it by time. I can also sort it by number of friends, which will then rise to the top of the things that more people are tweeting about or more people are liking on Facebook.
You can sort by time, and then you can apply a filter and say, show me the newest stuff at the top, but only shared by at least 3 people or 5 people. Or the other way to use it is to sort by popularity.
Right.
And then you can also apply a time filter. So I usually check in maybe 3 times a day with a 4-hour filter. And I say, show me the last 4 hours of stuff. And the most important stuff and most interesting stuff is right at the top because it's sorted by the number of my friends that are tweeting or retweeting or liking or sharing a news story.
So I'm going to sort by time. More than 10 friends have tweeted this. Now, is it better if you follow more people on Twitter or less? I guess because the back end of this is what you're doing, right?
I think it's better, but then you might need a little bit of help to manage it all. And actually, Nuzzle will recommend people for you to follow on Twitter that you're not following.
Right. And I can follow your Nuzzle feed, which is also cool, so I can see what Jonathan's friends like.
And once we're at a private beta, other people will be able to look at your feed, at my feed, and see interesting news that's sort of curated based on the people that I have chosen to follow or to be friends with.
So it's an interesting take on a kind of algorithmic and crowdsourcing news filtration.
It's definitely the wisdom of the crowds.
Yeah.
But the algorithm is really a human algorithm.
Right.
The intelligence lies within the people.
Is it very straightforward, or have you had to twist and nudge and refine it over time?
It's actually straightforward in concept, but very complicated in details. So it's sort of like you were talking about the idea, and the important thing is the execution.
Right.
So, the idea of social news is not, the idea for Nuzzle. The idea was social news with a certain type of look and feel and brand and approach and user interface and experience and a whole bunch of subtle details about how I wanted to implement that vision. And in terms of the technology, a lot of it is in kludges and heuristics and fixes and all sorts of stuff because it's sort of like a browser. Nuzzle goes out and scrapes these news sites, New York Times or TechCrunch or whatever, and it has to cope with sites that do things that are wrong, like sites that have canonical URLs but they're not really canonical. If I can get geeky for audience, this
they
is an appropriate
that.
Topic.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, so for example, there are sites that have multiple URLs that point to the same story,
right?
And we have to traverse and analyze that and try to dedupe those, and that's
right.
part of the software that Nuzzle has. But sometimes there are sites where they don't issue HTTP redirects, and there are more than one URL that go to the same story without redirecting. And then to make it even worse, some of them have in the HTML canonical URLs that are actually not canonical.
You don't realize how broken the web is until you actually try to use it as a machine,
right.
as opposed to a
It's kind of like building a browser.
Yeah.
You know, all the browsers have years and years and years of kludges in them to cope with all the things that people do wrong in the HTTP and HTML.
So you're not using RSS.
No. Well, there's a little...
You're scraping
the sites. There's a teeny little bit of use of RSS in it.
Right.
But it's not the primary thing that it depends on, because not every site has RSS. RSS has a lot of limitations. I mean, if you need to crawl a story that's not a story currently listed in the RSS feed of a site...
You can't find it.
You can't find it.
Right.
So RSS is used for a few little things, but for the most part, it's not a technology that Nuzzle can rely on.
Well, you're doing a lot more than I realized. You actually have to kind of get the data off the site and kind of reformat it in a way that's...
Yeah, and our success is measured to the user... It seems very simple.
It does. You know?
And that's the goal. But underneath, you know, the work that we've had to do, coding all sorts of stupid kludges and fixes and workarounds. I mean, there are sites that use Twitter or Facebook's Open Graph or Twitter card meta code to say the author or the image. And sometimes they use it wrong. So you adopt these technologies, but then sometimes you have to deal with the fact that sometimes sites will put the wrong stuff in those, and you have to deal with that. So there's a lot of these kind of things that you have to deal with to build a product like Nuzzle and actually make it work. Because the concept is simple, but it has to be fast, it has to be simple, it has to not have all sorts of duplicates, but really actually, you know, miraculously manage to realize that all these various mangled URLs all point to the same story, and it has to, you know, figure out all these little tweaks and correctly get the date, correctly get the author, correctly get all these things, despite, you know, all the sort of mishmash of things on HTML. There's HTTP problems, too.
So, I mean, as taking it as an example, so here's a story that was in Wired's Threat Level blog, because 10 of my friends retweeted it, or shared it on Facebook. So mm-hmm. I have both piped into here.
Right.
And then I can see, and it is retweets. So Siva Vajanathan retweeted it. Ars Technica retweeted it. So I can see these are the kind of top tweets. I can see more if I
And below
expand
that,
it.
You can also see we've actually sort of embraced the sort of
Reddit
ethos of the web.
Reddit
and
Hacker
there's,
News.
And there's stuff on Reddit and Hacker News about that story, so we link to it.
I love it that I can read the comments.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It gives you the context, and I think that's interesting.
You do publish an excerpt so I can see more, but when I click that link, it's going to take me to Threat Level. So you don't have to scrape the whole page, nor does Threat Level, does Wired lose any revenue, because most of the story I will be reading on Wired, so it's not like you're excerpting it without their permission.
I don't think we're doing anything that's disadvantageous to the sites. I think we are driving traffic, but then again, you know, there are, I think... France,
and, all the newspapers said
then,
Google can't link to us anymore.
And one of the Latin American countries, they don't want to be in Google News.
Right.
So
because they're publishing excerpts without our permission.
Yeah. I don't really think that makes sense, because I think if you're not in Google News and you're not in Nuzzle and you're not in Twitter, it's sort of like you don't exist.
Right.
You want that traffic.
Rupert Murdoch gave up. He fought it. He said, Google, do not index me. And they did it for a few months and lost so much traffic. He said, okay, index me, please. And I'm sure the French will do exactly the same thing.
I think you want that free traffic from Google and from Nuzzle and from Twitter and from Facebook.
Sure
of course you do.
This is a really I like it a lot. Now, I've used a number of other services. Brad Cross's Prismatic, same kind of idea. Is this a business for you, or are we still scratching your itch and it's just a great thing? When do you go public? What is your plan for Nuzzle?
So one of the things I need to do, like I mentioned earlier, is I need to hire some people on the team, because I built this whole thing myself. But I actually think it's an exciting business.
I love it. You did this all by yourself.
Mm-hmm. And news is a big market. Everybody reads news.
Yes.
You and I, our Nuzzle feed is probably very geeky.
Yes.
And if somebody's interested in technology and entrepreneurship news, they can read my Nuzzle feed and they'll probably be very interested in what's on there. Gavin Newsom is using Nuzzle, and his feed is all politics. It's completely different.
Lieutenant Governor of California, former mayor of San Francisco.
And he also rents a desk at Founders Den.
Ah. But I read that.
Yeah.
I thought that was very interesting.
You know, everybody reads news. It's probably not necessarily technology or entrepreneurship news. It might be politics, sports, entertainment, whatever. But it's a big market, and I think that that it is a very interesting business if you can become, you know, a breakout brand name, a household name, and that's the goal for Nuzzle. And I think that part of that's reflected in the branding and the name and the logo and all that kind of stuff that we've done. But next step really is hiring.
Including a hedgehog. It's cuddly. So you got to hire some
engineers. Yeah, so I'm going to be looking for, you know, engineer number one, number two, number three to come be part of this.
That's exciting. Just getting started. So you're funding this yourself. You don't have...
Actually, in a few weeks, we'll probably have something to announce along those lines.
Excellent. And when do you think you'll go public? After you hire engineer one, two, and three?
I assume you don't mean IPO.
I'm not talking IPO. I mean open.
Yeah.
Because what's frustrating right now, people are going to beta.nuzzle.com and saying, well, I want an invitation.
You know, as soon as I've got some other people on the team, so it's not just me that has to wake up in the middle of the night if the site crashes, we will open it up. Right now, people can apply for an invitation, and thousands of people have done so. And we will not, you know, lose those requests. Those emails are being logged in our database, and we will notify those people when it's opened up.
I applied, by the way, folks. It took me a little while to get in, and I was really glad when I got in.
Well, I think Matt Cutts vouched for you.
Oh, yeah. Matt was the one who told us about it. Yeah.
But I think that the timing for when we can open it up really just depends on my recruiting.
How does Twitter's API change affect you? Does it?
So far, what we're doing, I've showed it to folks at Twitter. They think it's cool. I think that, the Twitter folks, I think they like things that bring stuff back into the Twitter ecosystem.
And yeah, if I click Mark Fraunfelder's tweet of this story, it brings me to Twitter.
Yeah. So we encourage you on Nuzzle to tweet things back to Twitter, to retweet, to
retweet.
Comment,
yeah, yeah.
To reply back to Twitter. And we encourage you to, instead of building a redundant social graph, we encourage you to follow more people on Twitter. So Nuzzle will actually... you know, help you use Twitter even better and recommend interesting people for you to follow.
Jonathan's Twitter handle is @Abrams, and he also has a website at jabrams.com. And I want to talk about Founders Den a little bit when we come back. I'm just going to take a little break, talk about Ford Motor Company. It's kind of neat to see one of America's industrial giants, one of the companies that built America, really, from the 1900s on, to embrace the 21st century and embrace technology and embrace Silicon Valley. I was down at the Computer Museum where they announced their Silicon Valley office. And it's not for cars. It's for app developers to encourage them to use. Ford sees the automobile as a platform. And they have an API. And what they said to me is, look, people are going to own a car for years. We don't know how people are going to use their Mustang or their Edge or their Escape 5 years from now. But we do know that if we put all the sensors in there, all the telemetry, all the telematics, and we give developers an API that they can interface to it, then people will develop apps that work with the car. So that's what they've done. They call the API AppLink, and what people are interfacing with is the Ford Sync and the My Ford Touch and the ability to, for instance, use the Sync voice control to control the apps on your phone. And Pandora's doing it, Stitcher's doing it, NPR's doing it. There are a lot of apps now that you can control from your smartphone. So I want you to test drive Ford Sync. You can kind of do it online at ford.com/technology, but better yet, go to your Ford dealer. Don't say, I want to test drive a Focus. Say, I want to test drive Sync. Oh, yeah, okay, well, I'll drive the Focus. Bring your smartphone or your iPod or whatever device you have, and you'll see how Ford's voice sync technology allows you to browse your music collection by genre, album, artist. You can even say, if you're listening to a song you like, play similar music, and it'll find similar music and play it on your device. You can listen to entertainment on almost anything, voice control music, no matter how it's stored on your smartphone. You can use USB. All Ford Sync and My Ford Touch vehicles have at least one, sometimes two USB ports, so they charge, and you can control the device via that or via Bluetooth streaming, A2DP. You can actually plug in a USB drive with MP3s on it or an MP3 player as well. It's really cool. The iTunes tagging is kind of neat, too. I love that. If you're listening to the HD radio and you have Ford Sync and My Ford Touch and you're listening to the HD radio, you can tag a song you're listening to, transfer it to your iPod or iPhone, then purchase a song from the iTunes store at a later time. That's something they're doing with Apple. Very cool stuff. Ford includes Sync or offers sync on every 2012, 2013 Ford vehicle sold in the U.S. That includes that hot new Ford Focus. And I am just waiting for the 2013 Fusion, the energy, the plug-in hybrid. The minute that's available at my Ford dealer, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm going to trade in the 2010 Mustang and get the energy. I love the muscle car. I love the V8, but it's time to be grown up.
My first car was a Ford, but it did not have that technology.
No.
No.
Well, Walt Mossberg said, they said, when you get in a car, until recently, it was like going back you got disconnected from the world. You're in the car. And it's true. We probably should be paying attention to driving. So that's the whole idea of voice control. They've done a lot of research with, cognitive research that says if a person's got their eyes on the road and their hands on the wheel, they have enough bandwidth to interact with the sync without distracting them. What you don't want to do, and unfortunately a lot of cars do, is hold the phone or look down at a screen and go,
In San Francisco, everybody is driving around with their iPhone in their hand, texting and emailing while they're driving.
It's illegal. It's a big ticket, and it's still they do it.
That's why when you see somebody driving horrible in San Francisco, and then you're wondering, what is that guy doing? And you look over, and they're going like this.
It's actually epidemic. It's not just in the cars. It's everywhere. Nobody is looking up anymore at all. But that's another. I sound like an old man. Ford.com/technology. It's all Jonathan Abrams' fault, because if he hadn't created Friendster, we wouldn't have all this stuff to do online. It'd just be, surfing the net.
Well, maybe it's Jerry Kaplan's fault from Go.
Maybe it's Jerry's fault. Jerry did this. Anyway, thank you, Ford, for your support of triangulation. They're actually really neat guys. It's interesting because, they've got to solve that problem of, how do we keep innovation in a company that is, 100 plus years old? Wouldn't that be nice to have a 100-year-old nuzzle?
Well, when I started my career at Nortel, that was 100-year-old technology.
That's right.
And that's why I quickly shifted into
You got the hell out of there as quickly as you could. So this Founders Den is really interesting. And I misunderstood it. So it's kind of more like a co-working space.
Yep.
But it makes sense.
It's sort of an invite-only, referral-only co-working space.
It makes sense because one of the things that's missing when you're an entrepreneur is other entrepreneurs. It's so important to talk to other people doing the same thing.
Yeah, and if you have a one or two or three person team and you're working in your living room and taking meetings at Starbucks, that's a little boring, a little isolating.
Lonely.
And it's, you're sort of wasting time on certain things. And the idea is that when you get serious about something, Founders Den can be that first real office for the first 6 months. You come in there and it's plug and play. We've got the internet and the printers and the water and the coffee and the sodas.
I was thinking of doing a co-working space here.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be cool to have just to get some entrepreneurial people in here like that?
Petaluma.
There's a big difference.
So Founders Den is at 3rd and Townsend, right
in the
heart of SoMa. If you walk out the door of Founders Den, you will see famous people in the internet industry and people with their logos from all the different startups just walking around.
It's amazing. It really is amazing. And it's why, people say, oh, by the way, you're going to have a big Halloween party, it looks like. Is this slide?
Oh. Now we're going to sell some Halloween tickets.
You said this is a club, too.
It is.
It's a party space. Entrepreneurs know how to party. I know. I watched that movie, The Social Network. That Sean Parker, man, he's a party animal.
I haven't seen the movie.
You haven't?
No, but...
Why not?
I'm sure a lot of the party scenes are probably...
It's all made up.
Made up. Just like that new reality show.
Oh, the Silicon Valley reality show.
Right. And I think
none of those people are entrepreneurs.
I think they're from London and LA and stuff.
They're made up. It's actors.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me started on
that. But if they filmed a show at Founders Den, there'd be a lot of this.
Yeah, it's boring.
It's
typing.
Well, it's not boring, but it looks boring.
Yeah.
Think it makes good TV.
The brain is doing things, but
We have great companies at Founders Den doing cool stuff, but it's not the Real Housewives.
But that's why I think people have to move to San Francisco or maybe New York to be entrepreneurs. They say, why can't I do this here in North Dakota? Well, it's fine, but there's just something about being around this that just stimulates the idea and the senses and all of that. It's very cool. So I guess there's nothing to say about this because you have to be invited. It's like Nuzzle.
Well, you do have to be invited, but you know, any entrepreneur who emails info@foundersden.com saying, hey, I know it's referral only, but you know, I sort of get confused by that because on our website, we've got our advisors listed with right. some great entrepreneurs. We've got our sponsors listed, some fantastic companies. We've got our current startups and our alumni. And if you can't figure out how to meet one of those people
to get
and
invited.
Get an introduction, then how are you going to raise funding? How are you going to hire people as an entrepreneur? You know, you have to have networking skills as an entrepreneur. So anybody who's really interested in Founders Den, if they go to the site, they're going to see all sorts of cool people that are part of the community, and hopefully somebody can connect themselves with one of those people if they really want a recommendation.
It's a really great group, actually. I'm looking at the advisors, just some of the best people, some of my favorite people in the world, actually.
You've probably had some of those people
many
on
of
your
them,
show.
Yeah. I'd in fact, we're just going to mine the rest of them. This is now I know who we're going to have on the show for the rest of the
well,
time.
Well, actually, what you should do is have a show at Founders Den.
That would be fun. Can we do that?
Absolutely. We'd love it.
I'd love to do that.
You can film on location and you can...
We should do a show called Founders Den where we talk about... See, there's this stuff like Shark Tank and then there's this reality show. It'd be more fun to talk to people who are actually doing something.
I can't watch Shark Tank. It's too painful.
It's horrible. It's painful.
And it's not really real. I don't think most of the companies get the funding. But, you know, Founders Den is real. We've got, at any given time, around 25 different startups. They're usually there
Tell me some interesting people in Founders Den, either alumni or current.
Of startups?
Yeah.
Well, there was SocialCam, a company that I actually was an investor in.
They just got sold. That was a Justin.TV product.
Yeah,
right?
So Justin is a friend of mine. So he became an advisor to Founders Den. And then they were spinning SocialCam out of
Justin.TV. I use it. I love SocialCam.
And so we had they basically came to Founders Den, and that was their office.
Oh, nice.
And then they actually went back in YC, and then they moved out of Founders Den and almost immediately got acquired.
Who bought them? I forgot.
Autodesk.
That's interesting.
So Autodesk actually does a lot of consumer graphic software and stuff that I didn't even realize.
Stuff. Yeah, the 1-2-3 Catch is amazing.
Yeah, but we've had a lot of cool companies. Kaggle is a really interesting one.
I know Kaggle.
They do these sort of Netflix prize-like data science contests. It's very
interesting
stuff.
We've had them on the show. It's really interesting.
Yeah, so that's another Founders Den company. There's been a lot of great companies. Wenilo, Dot Cloud. I mean, it's we've only been open less than 2 years, but there's already been a lot of cool companies, and there's great companies there right now.
You must love it because you get to hang out with smart people and talk about interesting things.
It's fun. It also saves me a lot of time.
Do you hang out there?
Yeah, well, that's where I'm working.
Right.
So that's where my office is, and that's where... the people that I'm going to hire to be part of Nuzzle are going to work at Founders Den. And then I also do all my meetings there. So it saves me a lot of time.
Wow, that's really cool. That's really cool. Chatroom is your chance to speak and ask if you have questions for Jonathan Abrams. We will be glad to take them here on the air. And in the meantime, I will continue to monopolize Jonathan. But if you have something, please ask. He says, can you give us something, invites to Nuzzle, Beatmaster would like something, some way in, some magical way in. Can they tweet you? Can they do anything?
Do you have an ability to, let, I don't know, 10 or 20 people email you or something, and then I'll invite all them?
Yeah, that's just what I want. No.
No? Well, is there...
Because it won't be 10 or 20 people. It'll be 5,000
people.
Okay,
but the first 20.
The first 20. But nobody knows it's the first 20, right? So We know. No, but I'm saying that the first 20 will know and we will know, but then the other 4,980.
Well, they'll all go in our database and they will be invited. They will be invited. And if they want to get in sooner, they should just find some great engineers to.
John, if you could think of a way to make that work.
Well, I think there's a.
We should take this Commodore
pet. I think there are 20 people
and have it generate 20 random numbers.
There's 20 people who work here.
No,
I think we filled up our quota just right here. Well, what do you mean? I want it.
Fix your pet. Anybody who can make the pet work.
Anybody who can make the pet work, you are in. In fact, we'll give you an invite to Founders Den.
The tech news team needs it.
No, I'm not going to do that. That's cool. Nuzzle, just go to beta.nuzzel.com. It is actually, of all the social news stuff I've tried, and I've done them all, because I'm always looking for ways to quickly and easily find news. And I use TechMeme a lot. I mean, TechMeme is a really...
And we integrate with TechMeme.
Right. You do?
Yeah, so remember we were looking, right. And below it says there's the Hacker News links and the Reddit. So if we know that a story that you're seeing on Nuzzle because your friends were talking about it is also on TechMeme, we link to TechMeme.
That's
because
right.
TechMeme shows related stories. So
right.
we'll link to that
right.
as a resource.
That's kind of the way to do it, is to expand the universe and get everybody... Because there's so much
information. Well, there's a lot of people these days who think that the world ends with being an app. You know, you build your iOS app.
I hate this walled thing.
And then it's because it doesn't really link to things.
Right.
Part of what made Friendster so addictive was that you'd look at somebody's page, and then you'd see their friends, or you'd see somebody who wrote a comment about them, or you'd see how you were connected to that person through mutual friends. So then you'd click on one of those people, and then on that person's page there was stuff. So similarly, you know, the part of the web that makes it so great is the hypertextual part. And I guess that's a geeky thing to say.
No,
but on Nuzzle,
the free and open web is what it's all about. And cross-linking, hyperlinking.
Yeah,
I
love links because links are easy.
Right.
And, you know, it's not complicated. And if you're interested in something, then here's a resource for more.
So Fred says a Nuzzle app would be great, though.
Well,
unless you can make an open Nuzzle app.
Well, you know what I need?
What?
I need some iOS engineers to build the iPhone and iPad app for Nuzzle. So
Sashmo says, that's me. How do I get a hold of you?
Well, they should email me.
And if you can't figure that out, then you don't get the job.
Exactly. Anybody who can't figure out how to email me is probably not a programmer I'd want to hire.
Exactly. Now, don't hack him. I'm not talking about that. Just send him an email. Do we crash Nuzzle? Oh. Well, see, he needs some engineers. That's all. I am actually...
Well, I actually don't think Betaform is the right...
So they're going to a page within Nuzzle that doesn't exist?
I don't know. You just go to Nuzzle.com. That's all you need to do, and you will get to the beta sign-up form.
That's the problem. You're getting a Tomcat error because there is no page Betaform.
Is it a 404?
It's not
or
a
did, or did these guys actually crash the site?
It's a 400. No, that's a 400.
A 400, great.
HTTP GET is not supported by this URL. Stop it.
Oh.
Stop
okay,
it.
So that's not the right URL.
That's the
if
wrong
you just
URL.
Go to nuzzle.com, then you can sign up for the...
Knock
for
it
the,
off, you guys.
You know what I think one of the clever viewers has done is that's probably the URL that the post,
right.
HTTP post
that's
of the forum goes to.
That's what it is.
So if you do a GET
right.
on that, you're going
right.
to get an error.
It's request invitation is what
right.
you want to go to. Yeah.
There's just go to nuzzle.com and you're going to get redirected to the right page.
See, when I go there, I get...
You log in.
My site, right. my Nuzzle. Well, Jonathan, it's really great to see you again. So you were on the Screensavers a bunch of times, it sounds like.
Well, I was on Screensavers, and I think I was on...
Maybe we interviewed anyone Call for Help, too.
I was on Martin Sargent's show.
Yeah.
And then there was another one.
Unscrewed.
Right, and then there was a third one. I'm forgetting the name of it. It was Jessica.
Oh, Jessica Corbin.
What was her show called? I think I was on three.
That was
Tech
Revision
TV
3.
Shows.
That was on Revision 3, maybe.
This was before Revision 3.
Before Revision.
I think she was on Tech TV 2, wasn't she?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I don't remember the name of the show now because it was 10 years ago. Well, nine years.
Long time ago. Anyway, it's not Nozzle, it's Nuzzle. Don't go to beta.nozzle.com. That's a different... But I like the idea, and we're going to be in touch about the idea of doing a show from Founders Den. I've wanted to do a startup show. And, you know, Loic Lemur and Robert Scoble both said, we want to do a startup show. And I said, you're never in the country.
Robert Scoble hangs out at Founders Den because Rackspace
is one of
our sponsors.
It's all over then. I'm not going there. I'm not going to go anywhere. I love that site somebody made. Is Scoble in this room? It was for South by Southwest.
He actually comes to most of the parties at Founders Den.
He comes to most of the parties in the
everywhere,
world.
Everywhere, yeah.
Actually, it's nothing special about Founders Den. That's just Robert Scoble. No, that's not, it would be a lot of fun to do that. I think we should
do that. Yeah, we should do it.
If you want it, we'll talk about
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
All right. Jonathan, great to meet you, or see you again, I guess. I think we've met before. You look very familiar.
I'm still bummed that I wasn't able to program the pet.
So, you know, you want to take it with you, you may.
Wow.
We can take it home and get it if you can get it fixed. It's yours.
I don't know how to repair it. Maybe there's somebody watching this.
Somebody in Founders Den will fix it.
Is there somebody watching who knows how to repair a vintage pet from what 1979?
I'm
or something
almost positive there's somebody in the chat room who could fix the Commodore pet. Anybody out there? Anybody? Bueller.
It turns on, but the keyboard doesn't do anything. So I don't know if that means that it's really frozen.
It does say ready, and then the cursor goes
just
like your shirt. But then we can't type. So it's just a bad keyboard.
Maybe. We hope.
All right. We'll figure it out. Maybe we'll bring it to our show at Founders Den. Thank you, Jonathan. It's great to see you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Thanks
it.
For having me.
Thank you all for joining us. We do Triangulation every Wednesday right after This Week in Google, usually about 3, 3.30, 4, 4.30, maybe 5, depends on how long Twig goes. That would be 6 p.m. Eastern time or thereafter, or 2200. Actually, yeah, we're still 2100 UTC. No, it's 2200 UTC. It'll be 2100.
What's the star date for that?
Star date 6535.22. You know, I should start giving the time and date and star dates. We can do that, can't we?
Absolutely.
Okay. That would be much easier for our audience to figure out. Yeah, we like it if you watch live at twit.tv, but you don't have to watch live because we make audio and video downloads available after the fact. We call them on-demand versions of Triangulation. twit.tv/TRI or wherever better podcasts are aggregated. It's always free, always available. And, you know, if you've missed any episodes, do go back because we have talked to so many great people. It's so much fun. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Triangulation.